do Halloween.
Yeah, you got your outfit, too.
Thank you for joining us on our call today. All callers will be muted during the conversation, but at any time you can press star 7 to ask a question, and then at the end we'll have opportunity for question and answer, and again, you'll just press star 7. And now, here's Joe.
Well, hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us. As we always do, I want to start off telling you about our next call, which is Thursday, December 12th. Mark your calendars. The title of that talk is going to be called Leading in a Legal Environment. Don't shut me off yet. Listen to me. Leading in a Legal Environment. We have Kim Vance with us, who is she's an attorney, and she understands employment law inside and out, and she's got all the personality in the world, and she's going to take us through some really, really interesting subjects and interesting topics on the subject, and there's a lot to learn there, and it's very interesting, and in some cases, very humorous, too. So mark your calendars, Thursday, December 12th, same time, Leading in a Legal Environment with Kim Vance. Today's topic is the power of integrity, and we're grateful to have with us Colonel Art Athens, who is the director of the U.S. Naval Academy's Center for Ethical Leadership. He's a speaker, a teacher. He's part of our executive education program, and he's become a friend of ours, too. And he's a real authority on the topic, and the topic, as you all know, who know me at least, know that that's near and dear to my heart. And I've become convinced in my older age here that the bad guys all get caught sooner or later, and I think in this day and age they probably get caught.
Hello.
The moderator has left the conference.
Hello, Joe, are you still there?
Hello, this is Joe Scarlett again. I hope you're all still with us. We don't know exactly what happened, but the phone just went berserk all of a sudden. So what we're talking about today is a really key topic and one that's sort of the baseline for everything else we do. So don't forget to ask your questions. Send them in over the Internet. And with that, before we get started, let's turn it over to Mary Fink, our hostess for today. Mary?
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Art. We're so happy to have you online with us. We are going to talk about ethics, as we said, and I have a few questions that I'm going to prime the pump with. I'm going to ask them of Art, and then, Joe, you jump in whenever you have something to add or a story to tell, because I think stories are often the way we learn the best, particularly about these things. So, Art, how do you define integrity? And why does a company's integrity, or a company's leader's integrity, for that matter, make a difference?
Well, Mary and Joe, it's great to be with you and all those who are joined on the call. I hope this is a beneficial hour for all of us because we're all still learning. And I don't know, when Joe says I'm an authority on integrity, that makes me nervous right off the bat because I keep learning about this area as well. There's a former commandant of the U.S. Marine Corps, General Chuck Krulak, who I respect highly and who always talked about the origination of the word integrity coming from the Latin integritas, which means whole, W-H-O-L-E, complete or undivided. And I think going back to the root of a word is very helpful to really get at what it means and how we should be applying it. And I think those three words, dealing with integrity, whole, complete, undivided, how we're supposed to live our life, really hits home for me of what it means. And the way I define it personally is that I see integrity to be the consistent alignment of our values, our words, and our actions. Alignment is one part of it, and the other one is the consistency part. And I am a believer that we don't separate our personal and professional lives. I think the values need to cut across both, and I think that our integrity is all about maintaining that consistency of alignment in both our personal and professional lives. So when I think of integrity, I immediately think of that Latin word. And then the story that General Krulak used to tell was that the centurion, which was a Roman officer who was over 100 Roman members of a legion, which was a larger organization, would inspect his troops every day, and they would have their shield next to them. And as the centurion would come by in the inspection, the individual Roman soldier would tap the shield with their fist. And there was a certain sound that the centurion was very familiar with. If that shield was in fact whole, complete, undivided, had no nicks, had no cuts, had no possibility of not performing right in battle. And so when the Roman soldier would hit it and say the words integritas, he was proclaiming to that centurion, my shield is completely ready for battle. And the centurion had an ear that could hear the difference between a properly prepared shield and one that wasn't. So I want to make sure that if I'm going to be a leader of integrity, that my shield is ready every single day and doesn't have those nicks and is ready for those challenges that I'll have in the ethical arena. So that's how I tend to look at integrity.
Great. And I'm glad that you made the point that we are, you know, our lives are our lives. It's not a work life and then a personal life, because I think a lot of the problems that we've seen lately with leaders meeting their fall have been about their personal lives and not so much about business lives. So it matters. It matters that we are consistent and in alignment. Joe?
You know, you talked about integrity in your personal life and your business life, and as I like to say, leaders are always on stage, whether you're at work or in the local restaurant or the local gas station or your church or your community or wherever you are, you're always on stage, and it's important that we conduct ourselves with a high sense of integrity no matter where we are. That's a basic component of leadership. Leaders have to act with a sense of integrity, with a sense of ethics, and doing the right thing. And as leaders, we set the example. We're on stage, and we set the examples for the right kind of behavior, and the people who follow us will follow with the right kind of behavior almost every time.
The leaders are always on stage part strikes home, because we'll be in a restaurant or we'll be someplace out in public and somebody will be behaving not in the best way, can we say? And if they're wearing a jacket or a shirt or T-shirt even with a company name on it, I assume they're working for that company and I assume the company's okay with that behavior. So we are making an impression whether we even know it or not.
And you never know how many, in a smaller community, you never know how many people know you, even if you don't have your company shirt on.
Exactly.
People are, oh, I know him. He's so-and-so from such and such a company.
That's right.
He's so-and-so from such and such a company.
Well, that's why as a Marine Corps officer, if I know I'm going to go do something bad, I always wear an Air Force T-shirt just to protect myself. The other part of that is, of course, this divide, this artificial divide between personal and professional. That's why I think it's so important for leaders to take time to think through, so what are my values? Because if I'm going to align values, words, and actions, what my values are become very, very important. And we should be able to be comfortable with the values of the organization that we're working for and with, and our personal values, that there's not a complete separation. Because if there is, then that causes a real problem for a leader. But if we're going to be people of integrity, part of the starting place is, so what are really our values, and being clear on those, and then building forth from that. And I just fear sometimes in this fast moving, very electronic environment that we're in, that unlike the thoughtful leaders of old who really did take time to think through things and went out on a horse and spent a day out in the field thinking through what was really important, I'm not sure we're doing it as much as we really need to as leaders. And we can say we have integrity, but if we're not clear on our values and those values are not good ones, we're going to find ourselves in trouble down the road.
I think you're exactly right. And I think as someone who's looking for a new job, perhaps interviewing in a new organization, and you don't know a whole lot about the organization, that's where I would start the conversation. Because fundamentally, if they are not an organization whose values I can believe in and share, then I don't think I want to be there.
You know what? One of the best ways to learn about the values of an organization is not from listening to the person who's going to hire you, but by going and talking to some of the people that work there, and particularly if you can get into places like stores and factories or whatever, and just talk to people on the front line, you get a real clear picture of the value structure of that organization in a short period of time.
Right. So, Art, what does it look like in action? What examples do you have that demonstrate a high level of integrity? What decisions have you seen people make or actions you've seen people take?
Mary, I really believe that integrity passed down is all about example and stories more than anything else. Certainly the example that we set, people are going to be watching that. But if we want to help ingrain a culture of integrity, I think we have to be good storytellers. And I think we become more effective as a leader of integrity the more stories we have ingrained in our mind that come to the forefront as we're facing a certain a decision. Interestingly enough, just looking at the news within the last couple of days without picking on a particular company, but Johnson & Johnson obviously has paid up a pretty large sum of money for some seemingly unethical conduct when it came to the use of their drugs for purposes not approved necessarily by the FDA. And as I read that story, it was in juxtaposition to the story that often comes to my mind about making these hard but right decisions, not knowing what the end result is going to be, but you do it because it's right. And back in 1982 is when Johnson & Johnson faced the Tylenol problem where seven individuals died in Chicago, and they found out that it was because of cyanide poisoning, and it was all out of Tylenol extra strength capsules. And Johnson & Johnson was faced with this momentous decision of what to do. And what was fascinating to me is all the investigation that went with it said, you know, Johnson & Johnson, you're not really at fault here. We've checked your manufacturing facilities. We've checked your transportation routes. There's no evidence of cyanide. This is obviously a criminal act. But James Burke, as the chairman of the company, had that famous Johnson & Johnson credo sitting behind his desk that he kept looking at as he was trying to decide what to do with the other leaders of the company. And the opening line says something like, our first responsibility is to the doctors, nurses, and patients, to the mothers and fathers, and all those who use our services and products. And he kept looking at it, and he thought, if that's really true, if that's what we're really about, we do have to take action. And that's when he made the decision, against a lot of opposition, to pull 31 million bottles of Tylenol extra strength off the shelves all over America, and then offer an exchange for anybody who had already bought it who wanted to exchange to a different product. And the thing that strikes me is he didn't know what the end result was going to be, because a lot of people thought this could sink the company making this decision, but you know, he was a man of integrity, and he did what was right, not knowing what the end result was going to be, but in many ways it actually increased Johnson & Johnson's stature amongst the population and fellow executives and the rest. And I put that against what just has recently taken place, and that example of James Burke is a very powerful one to me when I think about stories that deal with making those right kind of decisions.
You know, Art, it being open and transparent is so important in situations like this. And as you said, J&J back in the 70s did such a great job with Tylenol. And I thought Burke was really brilliant there when he called 60 Minutes and he said, boys, come in with your cameras and sit with us for the whole time. So he was just as open and transparent as he could be. And that probably did more for the reputation of his company than anything in the world. But he just said, listen, we're going to do the right thing, and the right thing is we're going to be honest and upfront and transparent. We're going to tell everybody what's going on. And they did that, and the Tylenol bounced back and is a star today. And it's a shame to see what's happened recently.
Right, because that story really has become legend.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. And you know, when Joe talks about the transparency aspect, when you are a person of integrity and you're doing what's right, it's a heck of a lot easier to be transparent, because there is nothing to hide, because you're doing those things that align with the values that you purport. And again, there are just so many wonderful examples from the military, from sports, of people stepping up and making hard decisions that again often do cost them personally. And I think the more that we have those kinds of stories ingrained in our own minds, the more effective we are, because I literally have thought about that Johnson & Johnson story when I've been faced with something much smaller, but the same types of circumstances. If we have that kind of story that comes forth, it tends to encourage us to head off in the right direction. And then I think as leaders, as we try to create this culture of integrity around us, the more we're able to talk about those kinds of stories and have them ingrained as well, and encourage our folks to find other stories that fit their lives that will help them as they face these situations. And there's this pattern recognition almost where you see the situation you're in, and then these right stories come forth and you go, well, I can do that. It's been done before, and I'm going to take the hard but right pathway.
Exactly. So we've all heard of companies that didn't take the right pathway, and in almost every case, there's been, if not complete and utter failure, there's been a terrible demise of the business. Is there any particular example that you want to share, or Joe?
Well, you know, it's interesting to see how people, leaders, react in crisis. And I think that tells you a lot about integrity. And two examples, one way back and one very recently, come to mind. When Nixon was faced with the Watergate issues, instead of having the courage to stand up and saying, yes, we screwed up and I'm accountable, and I think everybody would have forgotten about that in a not-too-distant future, and life would have gone on. But they just stonewalled, and eventually, of course, it all came out. And then you look at what's going on today, and you know, if you like your health plan, you can keep it, period. And I'll give the president the benefit of the doubt that he meant what he said originally, but that's obviously not true today, yet the politicians are all stonewalling it as if that's really the case. And when you have a lack of integrity, you lose the respect of the people around you. And eventually it undermines your leadership, undermines your organization, undermines all sorts of things.
Yes, and Mary, you had mentioned before that, you know, the impact that it has on those around, and the military has recently faced and continues to face, unfortunately, these various commanding officers or people in high levels that are, you know, that are being relieved for misdeeds, and most of them, the vast majority, have nothing to do with competence. They have everything to do with character. And so not only does it affect that person, it tends to affect that person's family. It affects that person's unit that they commanded or oversaw, because now there's a morale issue, and there's a break in trust and things like that. It then affects the military as a whole, because the public looks in and goes, gosh, what's going on with these folks, and can we really trust the military with the type of power that they have? So as always, when there's a breach of integrity, the ripple effects are pretty wide and affect people way beyond just that little circle where that person might think, well, I'm just doing this one thing and this is about me. It really doesn't affect anybody else. It always does whenever there's this breach of integrity.
It always does.
Reminds me of an article I should have brought with me. I don't have it with me now, from the Wall Street Journal about a year ago. And they were outlining six CEOs of big public companies who in the past couple of years had all had affairs with either subordinates or business associates they worked with, and all six got fired. And I don't know whether they lost their families or not. Probably most of them did. But here are folks that worked their way through to get to become the CEOs of some of the biggest companies in America, and because they couldn't maintain self-control and self-discipline, they wound up losing their job. It's just a classic case of a lack of integrity.
And then what happens to the company? You know, the leader maybe, you know, you think it's all about the leader, but it's not, because then the company suffers, and then it affects whether it succeeds or not. It definitely impacts the bottom line.
Of course, in some ways, that's a complicated issue, you know, of integrity in the bottom line, because I agree with something that Joe said early on in the conversation, that it seems like in the long run, these things finally do catch up with people. But we recently here had at the Naval Academy Travis Tigard, who's not a household name, but he's the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency out of Colorado Springs. And he's the one who the evidence was brought to about Lance Armstrong, the cyclist. And, you know, it was very clear that there was sufficient evidence to proclaim that Lance Armstrong was involved in illegal activities of winning those Tour de France. So Tigard went to Armstrong early in the process to talk to him about what they had, and saying, you know, you could actually help us rid cycling of these problems, but you're going to have to admit fault. And Armstrong completely refused, and then actually used a media firestorm to try to discredit Tigard. And to Tigard's credit, he stuck to what he knew was right, and, you know, eventually these titles were taken away. But I think about all those years. You know, he was doing illegal things, and he was winning Tour de France and making a lot of money, and, you know, all those kinds of things. So a lot of times it doesn't happen at the moment. So to directly in the short run tie integrity to bottom line profit can be a little tricky, because the profit may be going up, but it is the long run that catches up with folks that lack this integrity. And again, it affects not only them but a lot of other people. And Lance Armstrong's another example of that, is Live Strong organization and cycling as a whole and all of that came out. But a lot of times people can be looking from the inside and going, gosh, you know, that person keeps getting away with it, and he seems to win trophies or profits going up and the rest. And that's where, as leaders, we have to be able to try to overcome that, of people's perception that, yeah, you know, a little bit of an ethical lapse here and there, it does seem to be good for the bottom line. So there isn't a direct short-term correlation of saying be ethical and profits will go up. Sometimes people can be very unethical in the short run and profits go up for them, and you shake your head. But I think not only is it about the profit, but it's about the people around that organization as well that are badly hurt. And if you look again at Lance Armstrong, not to pick on him personally, but he's hurt a lot of people because of his lack of integrity, even though he seemed to have gotten away with it and been in the spotlight and gotten all the applause.
Well, he certainly has gotten in the spotlight for a long time. But as I said earlier, the bad guys all get caught sooner or later, and this is a perfect example of that. And as a result, he's given cycling a terrible, terrible black eye, which has hurt all sorts of people along the way.
Absolutely.
None of us, very few of us want to work in an organization where there's a lack of ethics. And although, as you said, sometimes the companies can continue to roll along for a while with an unethical practices at the top, but it has a tendency to turn off the people inside the organization, and lots of them leave in organizations where they know the company's corrupt.
Usually the good people.
The good people.
That
don't.
Often is what will eventually impact the bottom line.
Yes, very true. You know, the other thing is that, again, I think leaders who are interested in integrity when they're working with the folks on the team, is to help people prevent the inadvertent slow downward slope of unethical conduct. I remember listening to a CFO, and I won't name the company, but it was one of the big companies that around the Enron time had problems. And I remember so distinctly, he was talking to a group of business students, and he said, you know, I didn't wake up one day and decide to turn the accounting system upside down so that we would look better than we really were. He said it actually took place with an executive asking me to change one number on one report. And I thought to myself, it's just one number. You know, how can that affect the broader thing? And he said 3 months later, I had changed three numbers. 6 months later, I had changed entire segments of accounting reports. And he said within a year, I had literally cooked the books. And so I think there are people that would not normally take that route who get caught up in a bad situation. Again, poor leadership, dishonest people, all those kinds of things. But we have to keep asking ourselves as leaders, how do we help our people to not get into one of those slides where they end up having a large ethical failure that affects a whole lot of people? Because we need each other in working through that to make sure that we all remain people of integrity.
Well, one of the things that I think is so important for leadership when it comes to the subject of integrity is to keep talking about it all the time. Make sure that everybody in your downline understands that you're an ethical person, your company's an ethical organization, and just keep talking about it. If you talk about it once a year, that's not the same as talking about it 10 times a year. And the more frequently you talk about it, the more people are focused on it, and the less likely they are to fall off the wagon and do something they shouldn't be doing.
And if you have it, just have it written down, it doesn't do you any good.
No.
It's so important that you talk about it over and over and over. And I use Joe as an example. I, in fact, just recently got back from a conference and used him as an example of that. I don't think I was ever in a meeting with you at Tractor or in a class that you dropped in on that you didn't get to that point. It's one of those things that you talk about over and over and over, and keeping it front of mind is the only way to have everybody bought in.
And the bottom line of Tractor Supply and the leadership that succeeded me and succeeded that leadership still do the same thing. They're always talking about the subject of integrity. And as a result, although Tractor Supply is not perfect, they have very few significant issues with a lack of integrity, way less than do most companies of their nature. For everybody who's on the line here, if you got questions or you got issues you'd like us to talk about, send them in over the internet. Happy to talk with you about individual situations or about general topics.
Exactly. Art, how did you develop your personal ideas about integrity and commitment to it? You didn't just wake up one day and you thought I'll be ethical today, did you?
I wish it was that easy. excuse me. When I look back, I really see that there were three legs to my stool when it really comes to integrity. One was my dad, and that was an issue of both his example and just as Joe just so eloquently said, it's this constant communication about the subject. It was a common issue that was talked about within the family, and you know, it wasn't Dad handed out a card one day that said, "Here are the family values, stick to them," and never talked about it again. He was a great role model in that way. The second one that parallels that to some degree are role models that I've seen in my life who have clearly been people of integrity, and I've seen that the trust and commitment that they build in people is extraordinary, and they too passed down stories to me, and I got a chance to observe them just like you did, Mary, in your workings with Joe. The other foundation for me is the Bible. It's been an important textbook for me as for both integrity and leadership. I read a lot of the leadership books that come out, and it's amazing how many of the principles they're talking about are actually filled in those ancient words that are there that I think still instruct us and certainly have instructed me. So I would say those are the three legs that have had the impact on my commitment to leading with integrity, not just being a person of integrity, because that's one thing, but then leading with integrity and encouraging this broader audience to lead that way really came down to those three influences.
Thank you. Joe, and this is a question I don't know the answer to, which is rare when it comes to you, but what was your early influence?
I'm not sure I can put my finger on a particular influence. I guess my mom and dad. I mean, we always talked about doing the right things. I had to make a confession here, but when I was, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old or something like that, I swiped a bunch of soda bottles out from behind a drugstore. And just to show you how long ago this was, I took them around the front and got 2 cents back for each bottle. somehow my dad found out about that. And my dad walked me across the street and made me give the money back and apologize. And that was one of those lessons I never forgot. And mom and dad more than anything else, and church and a little bit of the Bible. It was a way of life where I was. I'll tell you about a dilemma I faced in my early career. There was one fellow, and it actually turned out to be three fellows in the long run, who had found a way to run a cash register in a store and just eliminate all the trace of all receipts for the day. So in effect, you could run the register and keep the money and nobody ever know the difference. And finally, I found out about that, and these are peers of mine that were doing it. And the situation was such that they indicated that maybe my boss was involved in it, and the company I worked for didn't have the integrity that many companies have today. And it was a real dilemma, because here's a way to effectively line your pockets and not get caught, and everybody seems to be doing it. And I just, you know, I sort of looked at it and thought about it, and I can't get involved in this. And finally, I had two choices. I could have gotten involved with them, I could have left the company, or I could have done something about it. And after a number of months of dilemma about the subject, I chatted with my dad, and then I went back to the company, and I found the right people to talk to in the company, put the story on the table. They caught these three guys, fired them all, and I don't know whatever happened to them, but their careers were really messed up from that point forward. So it was a lot of us run into dilemmas like that in life, and if you're grounded correctly from the beginning, you tend to do the right thing.
And I would also add, as Joe's telling that story, I think both the story about the soda bottles, of course, his dad's involvement in it, which probably helped cement a lesson in, pretty well. But I think it's as we continue to live out our lives too, and we're faced with these dilemmas, and each time we make the ethical decision, it just strengthens it a little bit more. And that's why these small compromises can be so damaging, where we don't think it's that big a deal. As a matter of fact, I remember talking to this company out in Texas, and integrity was the issue. And one of the leaders came up to me afterwards and said, I need to confide in you that I normally at a place like McDonald's or Burger King or something will get a cup with the intention that I'm getting it to get water, but I actually fill it up with soda because no one really knows. And he said, honestly, nobody really cares. And he said, after the discussion we went through today, I realized that's a small compromise I can't afford. Now, a lot of people would look at him and go, what water, soda, what difference does it make? That's, for a company that size. But it does affect us. And again, I think our integrity continues to strengthen as we overcome these small, what seemingly are small compromises that are temptations. And we just becomes part of the process of just being that much of a better person of integrity and leader of integrity. And then when we mess up, unlike the examples that Joe gave, we come very quickly to the table and say, this is what I did, this is why I was wrong, here's how I'm going to recover from it, and here's where we go forward. I always tell midshipmen here at the Naval Academy that are going to be going up to the leadership of the academy, and they've committed either a conduct offense or an honor offense or whatever it is, I said, if you're going to do it, don't give excuses, because there is no excuse. One is that you need to admit you did it and you were wrong. No whining about it. And then two is, what did you learn from it? And number three, why should you remain on here and eventually become an officer in the Navy and Marine Corps? What's your vision to stay on the right, you know, the right pathway? And I think when we step up and admit it, and we're transparent about it, and get back on track quickly.
Art, I've heard you talk in your classes, and I don't remember what you call them, but in my mind it was an integrity partner. It was a confidant. It was someone that you could go to in those times of maybe ambivalence, to strengthen your resolve to do the right thing. Can you just speak a little bit to that?
Absolutely. I guess the principle is remaining accountable to other people, because I just keep seeing that one of the reasons people go off track is they become isolated, and that can happen for a lot of different reasons. And, you know, the common expression, it's lonely at the top. Well, it is, but it doesn't have to be. And I think we have to force those relationships. And a lot of times the most effective ones are outside of our immediate organization, people that aren't even part of what we're doing, that can take a fresh perspective, that we can be very honest with, that, you know, we can really lay out what's going on. And there's a couple of people in my life that do that for me, one in particular, and he asked me very challenging questions about how I'm treating my wife. Am I making small compromises? What am I reading? What am I watching? Where am I being tempted? You know, and of course I could lie to him, but he's a pretty tough former Marine, retired Marine, and I don't want to lie to him because I'm afraid of him. So I tell him the truth. And we need people who are willing to do that, and I think we need to be willing to do that for other people, and obviously doing it in a compassionate, loving way. But I think it's tough to try to do this on your own, and we really do need. I had written something about this idea of a little help from our friends, as the Beatles song talks about, you know, that we really do need each other to help walk this walk well.
Right. Thank you. Joe, did you have a comment?
I just everybody, *7 to send to ask us a question and make a comment and ask for a little advice and whatnot. So *7. I did have a story I wanted to share, a good story about ethical behavior, and it goes back to a buyer who worked for us at Tractor Supply, and she was buying animal health products, and one of the products we bought was iodine, which is used somehow in dairy cleansing and whatnot, and we used to sell it in gallon jugs, and she identified, her name was Lisa Worth, she identified that in a particular store we were selling, you know, like 50 times what we sold in any other store, and she did a little research and found out that was being used in the production of methamphetamine. And she, without asking anybody, just discontinued the product and found a substitute for it could not be used in the manufacture of methamphetamine. And we in management, we didn't find out about it until 6 months later. But she just knew, because of the ethical standards in our company and how often we talked about it, she knew what was happening was wrong. She's just going to fix it, and went about fixing it, and never told us about it. And I just think that's a fabulous story about when you set the right standards and you talk about ethical behavior and integrity on a regular basis. You know, sometimes people will surprise you on the upside by doing the right thing. So
absolutely.
I take my hat off to her.
And that's a great story. I have one more question, Art, for you, and then we'll turn it over to our listeners. I know we've been talking about integrity and leadership and not love, but you do make a point in your presentations to our classes that love and leadership are definitely connected and do impact each other. Do you have a comment about that?
Well, I guess I actually put it in.
What does that do with it?
I put it into the still into the category of integrity as well, because I think if, again, we're consistently aligning our values, words, and actions, I think one of the values we need to have as leaders is a genuine concern for our people. And I'm going to tell you a story that just happened yesterday. I'm going to speak to again, I won't mention a name, but it's a major agency of the federal government, and I'm going to be talking to their executives, and they have been doing a reassessment of their values, and that's what they want me to talk about is values within an organization. And the lady who I was talking to has been kind of on the forefront of this project with the values. I asked her, so what have you found out? Because they've done all kinds of focus groups, they've done surveys, they've tried to find out. So the people in this very large organization, what do they think the values are, the ones they currently have, the right ones, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, what was interesting is that the vast majority of people in the organization actually said, what I'd like to have is someone say hello to me, talk to me and know my name, who's in my organizational structure. Say hello, talk to me, and know my name. They didn't, you know, it's like all these highfalutin values and everything. They just wanted someone to show, like, I recognize you as a person, and I deeply care about you. This was just a conversation I had the other day, and I think it just shows that we're talking about people, and people want to feel special and valuable, and leaders do that by having a genuine concern for the folks that work for them. And there's a Marine general who I've always highly respected. He used to have a very large bookcase of leadership books, but he had printed up a warning label, and it looked like a warning label off of a cigarette pack, but it didn't have the words from the cigarette pack. It said, warning, these books applied without genuine concern are dangerous to the health of your people and your organization. And I remember reading it and being so struck by it. You know, we can have the best strategies, we can have the best analysis, we can have all those kinds of things, but ultimately if leaders don't show genuine concern, then their people will never get to where they could be. The organization will never get to where they are. And I think this genuine concern is truly at the heart of leadership in many ways. So I'm going to tell a Joe Scarlett story real quick here. I've never worked for Joe. I've worked with him through the Scarlett Leadership Institute. But there were two important data points for me to understand what he was all about. One is I was invited to speak to a dinner of former and current Tractor Supply Company folks down in Tennessee. And I'd never been to an event where so many people talked about the caring attitude of a person who had been their leader. I mean, I had been to events where one or two people, but like everybody I talked to said the same thing about Joe Scarlett. So I took notice of that. And then I had a little heart incident that took place. One of them took place about a year and a half ago. And I was just very curious about the people who reached out to me. So I got a phone message from Joe Scarlett that I've kept to this day. And he was actually on vacation someplace when he found out about it, took the effort to find out what my phone number was because he didn't know it off the top of his head or would have had access to it, and left me a message because my phone was off at the time. And in Joe Scarlett humor, you know, he said, hey, Art, I heard you had a little problem with your heart. He said, you know, I got a couple of tools out in the backyard here, and I'm pretty handy with them. You know, if you need me to open you up or something and take care of it, I'm going to do that. And then he said, just want to let you know I'm thinking about you. That's genuine concern. And I don't officially even work for Joe Scarlett, but that's the kind of example where people say to themselves, boy, I would go the extra mile for that, you know, for that person. And I think that's where this alignment of our values and making sure we understand what our values are and what they need to be as leaders is where love very much comes into it. And it can't be we just have genuine concern for the people who we happen to like, who happen to have the same background or they're from the same geographic area or whatever it makes it easy to like them. It's got to be everybody, and that's where the rub is, where a lot of leaders will love the people that are easy to love and basically ignore or just put up with the rest. Great leaders, I think, love across the board, and I think it actually ties in very closely with being a leader of integrity.
So now we know that's what love has to do with it, right?
Yep.
Thank you so much. We're going to open it up now to questions. I have one online. I'd always regarded integrity as a consistency between or the integration of what one thinks, feels, and knows, and what they say and do, both personally and professionally. Is this a good definitional foundation on which to build proper leadership skills and contribute to a culture of integrity in the workplace?
So I was trying to follow you, Mary. Was the word values or something associated with it? Because, again, I think the words, actions, thoughts, attitudes have to be aligned to something. And the aim is...
I think what he said was thinks, feels, and knows, and what they say and do. So the say and do would have been the actions, I think.
Okay. So I guess the other part of the thought and the rest would tie into the values, because I think that's where the connecting part is so important. On one hand, it's our values or our ethics, if we want to call it that, and then the other part is the character part, which is actually executing what we believe. But I would go back and say we've got to be careful about really thinking through these values, because our values could be messed up and we're staying consistent and aligned to a bad set of values. And I think integrity is making sure that those values are the right ones, that we're remaining consistent and aligned to. And why I think leaders need to take some time to really think through what do I believe and why do I believe this, and how does that fit into to leadership?
I think you're absolutely right. And one organization I know of that was working on defining their values didn't start with words. They had every employee in the organization that wanted to submit a story that they thought demonstrated who that organization was, and they pulled the words from that.
That's a great way to do it. A great way to do it.
I think so too.
Because, you know, it's funny because, again, the words, sometimes when I talk about values to organizations, I'll actually put up a slide and they'll have a set of values, and I say, you know, do you think these are a good set of values? And it has integrity and service and all these kinds of things, and, you know, everyone agrees. And then I say, well, you want to guess at what company it is, and, you know, they guess different companies, IBM, Apple, whatever. And then I put up a slide of Enron. It was truly the value set that Enron had and publicized.
Right.
And then I put up a picture of another set of values, looked like good values on the outside. And then I show a picture of the individual from the GSA, the General Services Administration, who went up and, you know, had this conference for $850,000 and was sitting in a hot tub with a champagne glass. They had values, you know, but I think the stories are the things where the powerhouse is. And then it's back to what Joe said, is this over-communication of what those values are, what they mean, what they look like. That's where the stories come into play. And then I think it's also highlighting when someone does it right, like the story Joe told about that individual who, you know, who shut down a product because they knew that that was the right thing, highlighting those stories so that people say, hey, that's what it looks like in our company. You know, you have the freedom to do that, and I, as the leader, encourage that. And again, I just think that storytelling is wonderful.
It is. Star 7 if you have a question or a comment, or type your question and click submit.
Star 7, come on, I know there are 100 and some odd of you out there on the call, so. We're waiting. There's a prize for the first one to ask a question.
I always tell...
That's a difficult thing to say if there isn't one.
I'll get one.
We always say to midshipmen here at the Naval Academy, if they're in this kind of setting, you're not going to go on liberty until someone asks a question, and that immediately gets someone. But I don't think Joe holds the same sway over those who might happen to be on this call.
I think
you're right.
Just hang up. as you can tell from listening to Art, myself, and Mary, we're very passionate about the whole topic of integrity, and we think it's essential to the operation of any organization, political, business, nonprofit, whatever. It's an essential component to life. It's an essential component to whatever you're doing. I do, from time to time, executive coaching and whatnot. If anybody out there has a really significant ethical problem and would like a little free advice, you'd be happy to feel free to call me, and I would be able to try and point you in the right direction if anybody's in that particular situation, as I was early in my career.
And I would suggest that even if you don't have a question, if you have a story to share, if you have something positive that you've witnessed either in your company or you've heard about it in another company, share that with us.
If not, we'll have to say goodbye. Well, in that case, we want to thank
you. I guess we covered it perfectly.
Joe and Mary, could I just tell one last thing to leave
sure,
with us
absolutely.
All? And then obviously whatever wrap-up comments. But when you talked about different influences in my life that have had an impact on my integrity, there's one that's fairly recent that really has made me think hard about this subject of integrity. And I began to read more and more about George Washington. And I've been fascinated by what he was able to do as the commander of this Revolutionary War army, the Continental Army, from all over the country. The various groups didn't like each other. He had almost no resources. He had a terrible boss in the Continental Congress, and eventually the Fuller. He had everything against him, but somehow he takes on the most powerful armed forces in the world and wins. Now, certainly France's assistance and some of those kinds of things were helpful, but they would have never gotten to the point of that without Washington's leadership. And the more I looked at it, the more I realized it was his integrity that pulled all these various groups together, and this consistency of caring about his people that caused this trust to build and a commitment to him. And then at one point in time, the army is so tired of not being paid that the officers get ready to revolt against the Congress and the leadership of the country. And they really, in the back of their mind, have set that George Washington is the person that they're going to set up as whatever they want to call him, their king or whatever. And Washington gets wind of this and immediately rushes to the point of attack, which is in a place called Newburgh, New York, on March 15, 1783. And he steps into the breach to stop this from going on. And I think about what it took to sort of turn down an automatic election as the king, because, again, it's easy to look back and say, oh, yeah, well, sure, that's the obvious decision to do. But people are very attracted to power and the spotlight, and Washington so clearly saw that this was not right. And did something about it. And then as I read further about Washington, I read what Thomas Jefferson said about Washington. And Jefferson was not necessarily a great fan of Washington, policy-wise, some of the thought processes, etc. But this is what Jefferson said about Washington. He said, George Washington errs, E-R-R-S, makes mistakes, errs like all men do. But he always errs with integrity. And I thought, what a striking statement by someone who's not even necessarily a friend or a supporter. And I thought, if that could be on my tombstone someday, Athens erred like everyone else does, but he always erred with integrity, that would be a wonderful thing to have written about me. And I hope that all leaders would want that said about them, that sure, they're going to make planning mistakes, they're going to make bad decisions, they're going to do all those things, but their intent was always an intent of integrity. And I think if we live that way, we will find people in great support of us, trusting us, committed to us, willing to go the extra mile to be extraordinary when we have that kind of integrity. So anyway, I just wanted to share that story before you closed it up.
Art, if I outlive you, I'll put it on your tombstone.
Thank you.
Okay. Art, thank you so much for being with us today. It's a great topic. We always love having these calls. And for those of you that are on the call, thank you so much for joining us. Our next call will be Thursday, December 12th, Leading a Legal Environment, Kim Vance. And I guarantee that will be, it sounds like a dull topic, but it's really a lot of fun. It's exciting and interesting, and in some cases it may be infuriating, but it's great education. So we look forward to seeing you. And in the meantime, I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving, and see you next month. Bye-bye.